Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. What does eternity mean to you? Is there such a thing, or does our existence cease at our death? Does our behavior here on earth determine our destination in heaven or hell, or are such places even real? Is there any truth to the stories told of near-death experiences? Is science attempting to refute that there is a God, or do science and theology complement each other? My guest today, Jeff Walton, addresses all of these questions and much more in his debut novel, Final Departure. Jeff, a U.S. Navy Vietnam veteran and retired NCIS special agent, spent nearly 30 years in NCIS assignments in the United States, the Far East, and Europe. His career spanned from general criminal felony investigations as a street special agent to senior management positions in the field, at NCIS headquarters and in interagency assignments at the Pentagon, the National Counterintelligence Center, and at the Office of the National Counterintelligence Executive. Jeff retired in late 2002 and was immediately rehired by NCIS as a reemployed annuitant, at which time he served in a variety of FCI and CBT management positions. He retired completely from NCIS in July of 2010 and has begun a new career as a writer. His debut novel, Final Departure, has won an Independent Publishers Association's Benjamin Franklin Silver Award for the Religion category, Florida Authors and Publishers President's Silver Medal for Christian Fiction and a Silver Medal for the Religion category, and a Reader's Choice Gold Medal for the Christian Fiction category. Good morning, Jeff, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Patty. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, Jeff. It was exciting to meet you back there in Philadelphia a few months ago, and you were generous enough to give me a copy of your book, which I so enjoyed. And today, I'm really excited to talk to you about it and all of the many questions that you addressed in it. So first of all, Jeff, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. What have you done with your life, as though your introduction didn't give us a good idea? How did all of your history in your different employments prepare you to become a writer?
Well, that's a great question, Patty. I started out as a fairly normal kid, if there is such a thing. I was a baby boomer growing up in the 50s in a typical middle-class neighborhood in southeast Pennsylvania. Like a lot of kids, I like sports. I like music. I was a classically trained trumpet player. And in school, especially in middle school and high school, I gravitated toward English and the humanities. And as a teenager, I was swept away by the tidal wave of rock and roll, the invasion of the Beatles and all of the groups. It really had an impact on me. So with my musical background, I taught myself how to play bass guitar. I joined a rock group, and I played professionally from about the age of 15 up till around 20. Also in my late teens, I was really captivated by the muscle car craze. All of the hot cars were coming out, the Corvettes, the Camaros, the Barracudas. And I decided in my senior year, I wanted to be a professional drag racer, not the normal vocation for most people. So instead of going to college, I went to an automotive technical school and I learned automotive technology. And when I graduated, I was hired by a local professional drag racer. I was sort of his apprentice for about a year. I helped him build a couple of what they call fuel funny cars from the ground up, and then we campaigned the car along the East Coast. I was his mechanic. And he was grooming me to take over to campaign the car because he had had so many wrecks and so many injuries. He just wanted to sit at the swimming pool and smoke cigars and hear about how the car did. Well, I was preparing for that, and that all came to a screeching halt in 1972. And your listeners will probably recall that the Vietnam War was still going on, and I got my draft notice. And instead of going into the Army, where they were going to send me, I joined the Navy for an extra year. So after boot camp, they sent me to Vietnam. And I did a year of combat operations on a combat ship in the Vietnam theater. And with my mechanical background, I gravitated toward, not surprisingly, being an aircraft mechanic. So I taught myself. I studied the manuals and took the test and became a jet mechanic, aircraft engine mechanic, and a propeller-driven power plant mechanic. So I did that till 1976. And during my last year of my enlistment, I was contacted by NCIS. They said they were interested in me. They somehow learned of me, and they wanted me to do some undercover work throughout Southeast Asia, go undercover and buy drugs. I did that, and I loved it. I found my calling. I thought, this is it for me. So when my enlistment expired, I went to college, graduated. NCIS would not hire me. They said I didn't have enough experience. So I was hired by the Interstate Commerce Commission as a special agent in their Bureau of Investigations and Enforcement. And after 2 years of being on a grand jury and doing cases like Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, the NCIS called me and said, hey, we dusted off your application. We're interested. If you're still interested, come on in. They interviewed me, and they offered me a job. So that was in 1981. And as you addressed and explained to your listeners, from 1981 to 2010, I was a credentialed NCIS special agent. Now, as far as preparing me to write, both those jobs really demanded a report writing ability that would produce reports that were clear, precise, and could withstand the scrutiny of a courtroom proceeding. And some of my later work was read at fairly high levels of the U.S. government, the counterintelligence reporting. So I had a background in writing, but it was purely nonfiction. I toyed with the idea of writing a book, but never anything certain until something happened in my life, and then things changed.
Well, it sounds like you've had an amazing career, Jeff, and I wanted to mention to you, just as a little aside, you talked about your interest in cars. Out in my yard, I have a 1981 Camaro sitting out here that belonged to my husband, and my daughter is bound and determined that she is going to get that car running and restored, because that was a one-owner car, that was her daddy's car, and she's going to drive it one of these days, and I have no doubt that she will. And I've had countless people ask me, what are you going to do with that Camaro? And it's like, don't even think about it.
That's right.
My daughter absolutely intends on, and she's one of these people that will get on the internet and Google stuff, and she's already done a couple of things. She got we had an old 88 Ford Ranger out here that wouldn't run either, and boy, she got on the internet and figured out how to get that going. So she's pretty good at that kind of thing. So I just thought I'd mention that to you. And I also wanted to clarify for listeners, Jeff, and probably the whole world knows this, but I believe NCIS stands for Naval Criminal Investigative Services. Is that correct?
Yeah, Investigative Services, correct. Okay. NCIS is an independent field operating agency. It's literally a civilian agency within the Department of the Navy. All these special agents are civilian, hired directly by NCIS, just like the FBI, Drug Enforcement Administration, Secret Service. All of the federal agencies operate the same way. NCIS is a federal law enforcement agency within the Department of the Navy, and the director reports directly to the Secretary of the Navy. No military chain of command in between.
Thank you for clarifying that, because a lot of times I think we throw out these acronyms and then you're thinking, what does that really mean? And I just wanted to make sure that our listeners were aware of what it stands for.
Right.
So you said you had to do writing for your work, and as we mentioned, it was pretty technical stuff. So what inspired you to go to the fiction side of things, and why Final Departure in particular? And what role did your faith play in writing your story?
Well, you know, the brutal, honest truth is it was my lack of faith and my sudden realization that I had no relationship with Christ. I mean, it was a crushing moment. And when I realized I didn't have a relationship with Christ and I was headed to a bad place, it was a major wake-up call. I realized, really, very suddenly, that the Bible was true and that there were consequences for not having faith. And that moment literally came from reading a book that I thought was probably going to be nonsense. And some of your listeners will be familiar with Bill Weiss's book, 23 Minutes in Hell. I know some of your listeners may not take the book seriously or may not have a favorable opinion of the book. But I can tell everyone that when I started reading that, and I did that out of boredom, I was waiting for a flight in Jacksonville International Airport. When I read that, within the first two chapters, it was as if God had switched on the lights and said, "All right, son, it's time to wake up. It's time to get to work. You've been goofing off. You've been running around. You've been running astray. Now is your time to do what I need you to do." It was instantaneous. And it was a life-changing moment. And I was horrified. When the lights came on, I also realized I was wearing some really dirty clothes, and I had a lot of dirt all over my hands. And I came from a profession where I was required to analyze the motives of everyone around me, because some people will kill you in a particular situation. So I analyzed myself, and I wanted to know, how did I get like this? How did I went to church as a kid. I went to Sunday school. I was an altar boy. I played in the church orchestra. I went through the standard process of becoming a Christian and becoming a member of the church.
Sure.
So what happened? Where did I go wrong? I wasn't just a backslider. I lived, even though if somebody put a gun to my head and asked me if I were a Christian, I would say yes. I lived like an atheist. I mean, I was so ashamed of myself and how I had acted and how I had treated other people, and most importantly, how I ignored God. I turned my back on him after all the things that he had done for me. So with a real heavy heart and a lot of baggage that I felt like I was still carrying around, I started to try to educate myself, just like I was still in the job. What is the kingdom of God? What is this all about? I started to read the Bible. I started to study the commentary of respected Christian scholars. I started to analyze the evidence that we have in the natural world that's all around us and pull it all together. And I realized as I read and studied that the Bible talks about a supernatural world as well as our physical world that we live in. The kingdom of God is in the supernatural world that modern-day science can't quantify or describe, but it absolutely exists. So I approached the study of the Bible like I was still in the job, and someone came in to me with some sensational information, and I was told to get to the bottom of it, to find the truth. So that was my approach. Now, when I got to the point, and I was doing research, when I got to the point where I felt like I had collected enough information where I could make a solid, circumstantial case for God in court, or in another setting, I thought it was time for me to share that with other people so that I could save others all the time and the effort and the anguish of trying to find these answers. I wanted to put it in an easy-to-read book that they could look at and read and say, "Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense." So that's when I decided I'm going to write Final Departure. A part of the book is semi-autobiographical. There's a lot of me in the book. There's a lot of my family. But I covered some things up to protect the innocent. And I also put, you know, the actual plot was a little, you know, the actual plot of what takes place in about a 48-hour period. That's fictional. But everything else is true to life. And I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later. But if I had to sum it up, I'd say I started writing Final Departure because I didn't want others to make the same mistakes that I had made by ignoring God and living a life that would have led to a really, really bad ending.
Jeff, when you wrote your book, you definitely had, as you also you just now mentioned, you had a nonfiction message, and yet you chose to write it as a fiction story. So basically, your book is an unusual blend of a novel with Christian apologetics kind of folded into the story through the characters. So explain to us why you went the fiction route versus the nonfiction.
Yeah, that's a great question. I wanted readers to take the book seriously. And indirectly, I wanted them to take me seriously only in that they could trust me as an author. You know, my background is really immaterial, other than I wanted people to understand where I was coming from. But I knew the minute that I felt a calling to write a book, I had a major problem. I had no theological credentials, and I came from a profession where credentials were everything. Your expertise spoke for you, and when you spoke up in a senior-level meeting, if you had the credentials and the reputation and the accomplishments, people would listen. They would take you seriously, and you could do things that ordinarily you couldn't. So I felt an acute lack of credibility, if you will. So I thought, okay, here I am. I'm a wayward, broken sinner who ignored the Bible and turned my back on Christ for most of my life. And now I'm going to write a book telling other people how to find Christ. No one's going to take me seriously. So I figured if at least I had the fig leaf of a novel, I could get the message out through some entertainment. And then as they read the entertainment, they're pulled in and they don't reject the message out of hand. And I also learned during my career, if you're going to deliver important information that you really want people to take seriously, you got to make it entertaining. You don't want to turn them off with preaching and dry material. So that's why I went the fictional route.
Well, not only that, Jeff, but you do it with story. And who was the first person that did that? Jesus Christ himself with his parables. He told
the
story.
What a beautiful point. That's perfect. Exactly right.
Well, Ben, your antagonist, his name is Ben Chernick. He is a professor by trade, and he is also Jewish, which I thought was quite interesting. Why did you make him a Jewish man?
Well, one of the themes that I picked up during my review of all of the research done by other Christian scholars was God's choice of the Jewish people to be his people, and through the Jewish people, God would reach everyone else, the Gentiles, so to speak. The other obvious fact was Jesus' life as a Jew, as well as that of his disciples. I also started to get a basic appreciation for the Jewish culture and its influence on the writers of the Old Testament. I was impressed by the fact that here we have the Son of God coming to earth in human form. He's reaching out to all mankind through his teachings, through his miracles, ultimately his sacrificial death for us all. And yet through a lengthy series of events, most Jews in the Jewish faith have been severed from their direct ties with Christ. And generation after generation, Jews have been disassociated themselves from Jesus. I wanted to use a Jewish antagonist to drive home the point how far the Jewish culture and faith have drifted from their true roots. It's clearly symbolism, but it's put in there to emphasize the point that the Jewish people, in all humility, really need to reexamine their lack of belief that Jesus Christ is the true Messiah for all mankind, including the Jews.
Well, very good points. Excellent. Excuse me, Jeff. I'm sorry. Give us a little, without giving too much away, of course, to the prospective reader, describe Final Departure for us. Kind of give us a little back cover blurb, if you will, or just don't give away all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Reel us in, but don't give away the real good stuff yet.
Right. I'm going to try to create some suspense in the listener, and hopefully they'll consider checking out the book. But from a more generalized standpoint, it's a book about, is the Bible true, but it's written from a national security perspective. And I guess the best way to sum it up is to say it's a story about life with a message about eternity. And I could really sum it up with two words, and because the target audience that I have in mind, my two words would be this: a warning. Take the Bible literally and take it seriously. It's the most important book written in the history of mankind. I would also say that Final Departure is a book for people who think God is just a myth. But it's also for people who have faith, but if you ask them why, they can't explain it. They don't know why they have faith. They just have it. It's really a book for people who want to be entertained, but also informed and educated. I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but I'll say that you have a retired NCIS special agent who's out doing contract work in a major international airport who's stranded by an historic ice storm. No planes can take off or land. And through a series of events, he ends up sitting in a chair throughout most of the night talking to this Jewish atheist professor, and the sparks fly. And I dig through various levels of the story, or I present various levels of the story to give the reader information and entertainment on a variety of levels. For example, on the surface, it's really a hybrid blend of drama and suspense that deals with adult themes: life, love, family relationships, betrayal, divorce, illness, and death. But underneath that surface story that the reader gets, I give the reader also some insights, true insights, into the culture of law enforcement and national security professionals. And I also talk about the profession of an academic, a professor. So I look at that. And then below that, I have another layer of information, if you will, or storyline, which is social commentary. I make comments through the main characters about our culture. Also, there's education, as you pointed out in the beginning of the broadcast. I give the reader information about specific areas of research where there's evidence to strongly support the authenticity of the Bible. For example, I talk about numerics in the Bible, the actual study of numbers, and how you can use basic mathematical equations to show that the Bible is absolutely unique in its structure. I talk about geology, biochemistry, history, what some would say is current-day science, and all of that I put together into a mosaic, if you will, to show that there's clearly identifiable evidence that supports the literal written word of the Bible. But I don't want the listener to think this is some dry textbook. I just introduced
the reader. No, absolutely
not.
If I can interrupt for a second, I can attest to that because I read the book and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. As you know, Patty, I talk about specific areas. I talk about some key facts. And then the reader can do follow-up research on their own if they're interested. And my goal was to draw the reader in and make the reader feel like they're part of the debate. I don't take sides. I present both sides. Now, obviously, I have my Christian convictions, but I get the other side of well. That kind of sums
it
up.
You plant that seed for the reader to do further research and exploration on their own and even begin to start thinking about these topics that they may not have ever thought about before.
And exactly.
They're the most important questions in your life you'll ever answer. Jeff, at this point, I'm going to take what I call a little break. We have folks that sometimes come into the radio show after it has started, so they don't know who or what they're listening to. So, listeners, this morning you are here on Blog Talk Radio, tuned in to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Today, I am pleased to have my guest, Jeff Walton. Jeff is a former NCIS agent. He has quite an amazing employment history. And he has now retired from that service and is a writer. His first book, Final Departure, has been out for a few months now, Jeff. And it deals with the issue of eternity and faith and religion and just all kinds of questions that we ask ourselves about God's existence and where we're going after we die, and is there any truth to the Bible, and all of these things. And he intertwines all of these questions into a quite interesting story. It is a fiction book, and I would urge folks to buy it and to read it, because it's quite a fascinating book. Jeff can be found on his website and on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm not going to give you those URLs right now because you would not remember them, but I am going to refer you to my website, which is Patty Sheene, PattySheene.com. That's all one word. And on that website, you will see on the very first page, you'll see an ad for the ad, if you will, or for the show. And under more information, that's where you will find the URLs for Jeff and some information about his history. So I would urge you to go check out that website. The show is also archived, so you can listen to it in its entirety, or listen to it again, or refer friends to it, or whatever. All of the shows that have been broadcast on Step Into the Light are available on that website. So I would urge you to go and check them out. Jeff, getting back to our interview, this is one question that always comes to mind when I read a book by someone who has a fascinating career history like you do. Your protagonist talks about some national security investigations and operations and some basic intelligence and counterintelligence operational principles. Are these things real? Is this the way it really is in your world, or is this all fictitious?
It's all true, Patty. It's all real. All the brief vignettes of NCIS cases and operations that Dan Lucas, the protagonist, about or describes are actual cases that I and other NCIS agents worked. Of course, all of the identifying data had to be stripped out of it to make it classified. And the same is true for the descriptions of national security operational principles that Dan Lucas talks about, like polygraphs, lie detector tests, asset validation, which is basically either confirming that an informant is telling the truth, or an undercover operative that you're preparing is ready and able and capable of performing his mission or her mission. That's all true. But in order to put it in the book, I had to submit all the excerpts that dealt with that material to NCIS headquarters, and they had to do a security classification review. Everything survived. I knew it was unclassified, but I had to go through the process. But they did ask me to make some changes, which I did. But everything that the reader gets is a very small glimpse into the real world of NCIS and national security operations. I just want to make one comment for the listener. You may wonder, why don't I ever hear about NCIS in the news? Well, there's a reason. They don't do press conferences. They don't do press releases unless they absolutely have to. Just like the CIA, they mm-hmm. try to keep all of their information in official channels so it doesn't do damage or it doesn't embarrass people. So that's just an aside.
Interesting. Yeah, I find it quite fascinating that TV watchers, as TV watchers, we're so gullible, we believe everything we see on the screen, and yet, boy, if you put it is not factual and a reader knows about it, you hear about it. So.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but yeah, I figure that most of what you had in there had to be. I didn't think you could just make this stuff up. So, yeah, it gives a reader a good kind of a glimpse of what life is really like inside of that organization. Dan Lucas presents as evidence to support the authenticity of the Bible and the existence of God several times throughout his conversations with Ben. Where did you get your information?
I got it from... Yep, go ahead.
I was going to say, was it something that you drew from your own experiences in your own faith journey, or did you like go to a library or get on the internet and do a whole bunch of research?
Patty, really all of the above. I did a tremendous amount of reading. I did what would be the equivalent of a graduate level research program. I was just I was just trained to do that. If I had to get to the bottom of something, I had to look at every possibility. So I read research from many, many different people, and I went online in some cases, and I did some raw research of databases to get a picture of the issue that I was dealing with. And I want the listener to understand that I used a very skeptical mindset when I started to do the research, because I spent 30 years dealing with foreign adversaries whose whole job was to deceive us. So my antenna was always up. I was always looking for inconsistencies or what I considered to be attempts to fudge or falsify information. I'd say it took at least 5 years to do all the research that I did, all the reading. I was on sort of a dual track. I was building my own faith through learning about the Bible, while I was also reading and reviewing the research of other scholars about all those various topics that we talked about earlier, the geology, biochemistry, etc. I tried to think back, and I estimate that I read at least 50 books, scores of many more books. I watched teaching videos. I listened to countless Christian teachers. I did a lot of very careful reading on the web, and I actually interviewed some people for some of the NDE aspects of the book. And as you pointed out, I also drew on my own background and training when I did the research and pulled the information together. I want to emphasize one point to the listener. Every fact or point that I make in the book was based on someone's research, and I evaluated their research to the best of my ability. It doesn't mean that I didn't make mistakes, but none of it was made up, none of it was stretched or fabricated to fit a particular belief. It was all as true as I could make it. Also, when it came to reading scripture, I relied on really the consensus of the majority of Bible scholars when I looked at a particular passage and I tried to interpret it. So I relied on the experts, since I really had no expertise whatsoever in theology or biblical studies.
Excellent. Yeah, and it shows. It shows in your story. Jeff, I was going to call you Ben, for goodness sake. It shows. It does show in your story, Jeff. Now, this is a subject that absolutely fascinates me. Your protagonist spends a lot of time talking about near-death experiences. Why did you choose to place so much emphasis on them and make them such a prominent topic in your book? And I probably just answered that question because, like I said, they fascinate me, and I'm sure they fascinate millions of other people out there. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. As a former criminal investigator, I learned over the years, as all my colleagues did, how to distinguish between potential evidence and meaningless extraneous information. So you develop that kind of knack. And when I first stumbled on the topic of out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences, which are called NDEs for short, when I stumbled on that topic through Bill Weiss's book, I didn't know anything about them, so I began to reading as much as I could. I was very skeptical, but I kept an open mind. Well, what I found was an area of scientific inquiry that's supported by scores of peer-reviewed scientific studies. Really, there's hundreds of them. And what caught my attention was that there was repetition. There was a pattern. In my old job, if someone came in and said, hey, there was a shooting down at 5th and Main, I said, okay. If the second person came in and said, hey, there was a shooting at 5th and Main, I'd pay a little more attention. By about the time the 10th person walked in, I conclude there something happened at 5th and Main. It was the same process with studying NDEs. But I realized and I read about thousands and thousands of people who were reporting leaving their bodies during clinical death. Many times they observed events in their immediate vicinity, whether they were in a hospital or at an accident scene, and then they report traveling to some otherworldly location. They talk about meeting beings of light, seeing deceased friends and relatives, sometimes reporting going actually to heaven or hell, and sometimes actually meeting Jesus. When you see this pattern established time and time again by people all over the world with no connection, no way to conspire or to confirm and to, you know, compare notes, you start to get the picture that something is going on. And then you add on top of that all of the scientific work done by primarily medical doctors and professionals. You realize something is going on. Now, I was very skeptical, and when I read all these, I thought, okay, one of three things is happening. Either they're hallucinating, their brain chemistry is causing this memory that really didn't happen, or they're fabricating. They're lying to make money or to achieve fame, or maybe they're telling the truth. And it was that last explanation that really intrigued me, because if they were telling the truth, it told me many people were confirming what was written in the Bible. And I carefully looked at the naturalist explanations for NDEs, and some of them are thoughtful and well done, but after looking at all the research, all the studies, I came to the conclusion that NDEs are real. They do lead to a brief transition. Sometimes it's very short. Sometimes it's very complex and lengthy. But it does lead to our transition as a being to the supernatural realm where God and Jesus Christ and other supernatural beings inhabit. And they should be taken seriously, in my humble opinion. They should be taken seriously or taken into consideration when we're discussing whether or not the Bible is true. They're eyewitness testimony. They're testimony that we have a body, we have a soul, and we have a spirit, as the Bible tells us. And we do live after our physical body dies, and we do transition. And really, the Bible is the most accurate and authoritative written work anywhere that matches what the NDE witnesses are telling us. I wanted to make that point. That's why I really, really focused in on NDEs. It's circumstantial evidence. I want to mention to your listeners that there are two books that I recommend. One is Imagine Heaven by John Burke. Excellent book that looks at NDEs and connection with the Bible from a nonfiction standpoint. And also Near-Death Experience is Evidence for the Existence of God and Heaven by John Steve Miller, both excellent works. There's many, many others. These two stand out. Another point that I wanted to make through the book was we shouldn't just look at NDEs through the lens of science. We should look at them as a judge and jury does in a courtroom where evidence is presented. Evidence is put on the stand, if you will. It's examined. It's cross-examined. It's confirmed or refuted by expert witnesses. And then there are eyewitnesses who report firsthand information, and the judge and the jury ultimately make the decision whether it's true or not, whether the verdict is sufficiently supported. That's the world that I came from, and that's why I focused. I think that's very important. We should not, just because science may poo-poo, or some elements of science may poo-poo NDEs, my advice to the reader is take them seriously. Another main reason, one of the driving reasons for putting them in the book, was I ran across quite a few distressing or what are called hellish NDEs, and I saw very little discussion of them in studies and other commentary. It was almost like they were being ignored deliberately because they caused people discomfort.
Because they don't want people to be uncomfortable, yeah.
Right. The book that led me to return to my faith was about an out-of-body trip to hell. Exactly. So I needed to know for my own personal edification was it really possible that Bill Weiss and many others could have gone to hell, or were they just fabricating some sensational story and they weren't telling the truth? So I really concentrated on looking for the distressful, the hellish NDEs, and I found them. I also made it a point to personally meet or interview some of the witnesses, the people who claimed they went through an experience. And I used my training. You know, I look people in the eye, I ask them questions, or if I do a phone interview, I circle back, I ask the same question four or five times. And I can tell you the people that I talked with, and I'm not going to mention their names here, I'm convinced they were telling me the truth. So I came away convinced that hellish NDEs happen. Therefore, hell exists. And that the NDEs happen far more frequently than is publicly discussed. And they paint a picture of exactly what is described in the Bible. Hell is a place of eternal torment. Now, people are probably saying, well, why in the world would you want to put such material in a book? But like I said in the very beginning, Final Departure is a warning. Please take the Bible seriously and all of its warnings about hell. I also wanted to address, at least briefly, the concerted effort of what I saw in the literature was that some would say, well, gee, look at all these positive, all these beautiful, blissful NDEs. That's evidence that everybody goes to hell regardless of how they live. I don't believe that's true. And I think, number one, the Bible says it's not true, but now we have added circumstantial evidence from NDE witnesses, from their experiences, that it definitely isn't true. I also wanted to bring up, and I had a lot of it edited out of the book, but I also wanted to introduce the topic that some NDE witnesses undergo deception. And I'm convinced, based on my reading and the research of others, that some people who have blissful NDEs and neat, nice beings of light, etc., that these are deceptive experiences, that these are demonic, that they are not going to heaven. And I think the Bible very clearly tells us that, warns us, that Satan masquerades as an angel of light. And that's a topic
yes,
that I'm
does.
Very interested in, and I'm going to do more research on that to further flesh that out.
Wow. Pretty interesting, Jeff.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, the premise of this show is for folks to talk about a time of darkness. Well, not just that, but talk about a time of darkness that they have experienced and how they found their way back to light. Now, you, through reading your book, are leading people out of the darkness of lack of knowledge into the light of awareness of what's real and what's true. But also, I would like you, if you're okay with it, to touch on a dark time in your life. And it doesn't even have to be anything super personal. It could even be a dark time you experienced when writing the book or trying to get the book published. So whatever is comfortable for you, Jeff, just share with us.
Sure. Sure, I could fill up a whole program with a dark time in my life, unfortunately. And I'm sure other people are the same way. You know, as a kid, I grew up pretty much emotionally alone. My parents were, I had great parents, so I love them dearly, but they were fully occupied with life. My darkest days came after I came out of the Navy. I was married, I finished college, I became a federal agent. And my wife at the time, after we were finally getting settled and I was getting all my past behind me, she decided she didn't want to be married anymore. That was a really dark time. I regrouped. I recovered. Still not reaching out to God like I should have, but I'm married to a wonderful woman now. We're in our 32nd year of marriage. I do a lot. When I retired from federal law enforcement and national security work, I brought kind of a different kind of darkness with me. It pushed me into kind of a gloomy place, and I'll just summarize it. You're under constant stress in a job with NCIS or the FBI or all the other agencies. And in order to survive emotionally, psychologically, you've got to compartmentalize your professional life from your personal life. And it even gets worse when you're in the national security arena or you do national security work. Everything's classified. In some cases, you literally work in a vault behind cipher locks. Everything you do is classified. You can't discuss anything with your wife, your children, your family, your friends. And in many cases, you can't even discuss it with fellow coworkers because it's all compartmented. They don't have a need to know. So you end up compartmenting your life. So you think one way at work and you think a separate way at home. And that's a very bad way to live. And it causes tremendous stress. And if you don't know how to make that transition, you'll never recover from your previous line of work. So that was a dark time. And I would just also say you've got to be very careful about being prideful. Because we accumulate all these certificates and plaques and all of this stuff we put up on our walls. But pride is a huge sin, and it's like a cancer, and you really have to watch it. So just being prideful has been a dark area, and I'm working on that.
Well, thank you for your honesty in that, Jeff. I don't know how you are with time, if you do have the time. I would like to mention specifically one of your chapters that really interested me. Well, they all interested me, but this one, you focused on music and entertainment and those industries. Why did you include that topic in your book? Because I thought some of the points you brought out were spot on myself anyway.
Yeah, I have plenty of time, Patty. I'm at your disposal. When I was doing the research for Final Departure, I was struck by the number of times I read references or heard about references to the connection between modern entertainment, modern music, and the satanic, and specifically music. Initially, I dismissed the connection as just the product of some overactive imaginations of conspiracy theorists. That's just all bunk. But after I started to look at the subject, and I had no opinion one way or another, I really didn't care, I started to see a real connection between Satan, music, album covers, song titles, lyrics, and the actual stage setups for concerts that were clearly demonic. And the sheer numbers of times I found references to Satan and the demonic over the past five decades in music, it really shocked me. It convinced me this is not a coincidence. This isn't some fluke or some marketing strategy or some passing fad to titillate the masses and attract customers. Something is going on here, and I think the only conclusion that I can come up with is this is the Prince of Air. He's trying to do something with it. So again, I want to warn people that there is ample evidence to support the theory that Satan uses music to promote himself to unsuspecting listeners and viewers when it comes to videos. And that's not good. And then it really pertains to the youth that are unsupervised. They don't have a parent or a mentor to screen what they listen to and what they see. Mm-hmm. So not all music is satanic. I want to make that very clear. Most of it is not. But there is a vein running through pop music. For example, death metal. That I tell you, if you listen to that, in my opinion, it will darken a listener's soul. So I urge the reader, speak for yourself. Final Departure will give you some basic information, and you can go from there. And lastly, I just want to mention, heaven is full of music. Heaven can music can heal. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. Hopefully, when you go to heaven, you will be astounded by the gorgeous music that is always playing.
Very good. You know, when I was a kid, gee, I remember this well. My dad was absolutely death on rock music. Oh, my goodness. I mean, we were not allowed to listen to it.
Yeah.
And a funny story that my sister and I recall, had an aunt and uncle that lived a few miles away, maybe 50 miles away, and they lived, my uncle was manager of an apartment co-op right on the Atlantic Ocean. Out there on Long Island, Fire Island. And we went out there for the weekend, and us kids stayed and spent the night. And my uncle took my cousins and my sister and I to a Beatles movie. Oh, my goodness, Jeff. I'll tell you what, when my dad found out, he was so angry. He wouldn't even talk to my uncle for, like, I don't know, it was probably 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just livid. He was so angry over that. And now my sister and I look back, you know, and kind of laugh about it. But the funny thing is, years later, he was in the store with my cousin, and they were playing the song Michelle, an instrumental. And my dad said something about, you know, I don't know who wrote that song, but boy, they sure know how to write music. And my cousin, I didn't dare tell him who wrote it.
Yeah, the good mixed in with the bad, so to speak.
Oh, absolutely, right? Yeah. So anyway, when you mentioned at the very first of the program, you're talking about rock and roll, I thought, oh, I've got to work that story in. About me being a kid in rock and roll. Now me, I had one of those little transistor radios, you know, and boy, I would lay awake until midnight, because at midnight, all of the local stations went off the air. And I could get Wheeling, West Virginia, which was the only station on the whole eastern seaboard back then that played Western music. I was a Western fan from the time I was a kid. Of course, all my friends thought I was nuts. They just did not understand me at all. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just said music can really warm the soul.
Oh, it absolutely can. And I was thankful. I was never exposed to classical music as a child and a young person. But my daughter and my son both took piano lessons from a lady here in town for several years, and they were exposed to the classics. And I was always grateful for that for them. And they kind of exposed me to some, too. And, there's wonderful, beautiful music out there that can really move a person's spirit. Well, Jeff, we talked about your book quite a bit, and I think readers pretty much get the idea as to what message you want to convey. So what I would like to know before we close is, what kind of plans do you have for the future? You spent years researching this book, so I'm sure you're not going to quit here. What's next?
No, you're right, Patty. No, I've actually started my second book that will pick up where Final Departure leaves off. And one of the reasons that I'm doing that is I've had a number of people complain that Final Departure is too short. They wanted more of the story. They want me to continue. But I said, all right, I'll give you what you're asking for. So I won't spoil by giving the title, but a sequel, if you will, is in the works. I also have an outline for a third book already, because I really want to get into the nonfiction area where I can explore some of these themes that I talked about earlier, hellish NDEs and what is the real evidence. But I want to do it in a more factual format in a nonfiction book where it's annotated with the appropriate references. So I'm doing that. And as you know, I'm in the process of updating my website to make it more user-friendly and more technologically advanced, if you will. I'm also working on a blog that's going to go with a new website, and I'm simultaneously putting together several different presentations, talks, if you will, for different venues, both secular and Christian. So I'm starting to talk about my old profession, but more importantly, I'm talking about my book, and the most important thing is the kingdom of God and why it should be really the centerpiece of all of our lives. I know it's hard with all the competition from everyday life and everything that we have in it, but really, God needs to be the center of our life. So hopefully my books, my current book and my books to come, will get that message across.
Well, that's great, Jeff, and it sounds like you have some really amazing plans in the future, and I'll pray that God will bless you in all of those endeavors, and that he will continue to bless you with the sale of Final Departure. Is there any final thoughts that you would like to leave us with today before we close out the show, Jeff? Anything you wish you had said?
I would just say that when you feel bombarded by the culture, when you feel bombarded by everyone around you who poo-poos the Bible, just know, and I mean this with all sincerity, there is a tremendous amount of evidence in the physical world that supports the Bible and confirms God's existence. It's hard not to succumb to the pressure, but we're really called to stay educated, to gain knowledge, and to be prepared to tell people why we have faith. So at whatever level you can do, the listener should at least understand some basics so they can explain to a non-believer why they believe in God and Jesus Christ, our Savior.
Absolutely, Jeff. Well, thank you so much for the time that you spent with us today. I really enjoyed talking with you and talking about the book, and it's just been a pure pleasure. So thank you very much, and may God bless you.
Well, thank you, Patty, and thank you. God bless you, and thank you for this tremendous program that you have. Thank you.
Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. I hope you'll join us again next week, Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock. It's going to be Mountain Standard Time by then, because throw a little reminder in here to set your clocks back an hour on Saturday night before you go to bed. So thank you for listening, and may God bless you throughout this week.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a
Now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
Hardship. My grandmother would go through it every month to pay her insurance bill. First, she would handwrite a paper check, in cursive. Then, using her own tongue, she would wet a stamp for an envelope. Today, however, we need not weary our hands and tongues. Today, we can pay our GEICO bill with the GEICO app. Away with hardship, in with bill pay on the GEICO app. Thank you.